Hello and welcome to episode 12 of series 4 of the Engaging Internal Comms podcast, and this is our 100th episode. This is the show for employee engagers and internal communicators who like to keep up to date with all that is new in our profession. My name's Craig Smith from The Big Picture People, so welcome to this, our 100th episode. Our very first episode went out on the 16th of June 2020. I'd always wanted to start a podcast. I'd always been interested in having a podcast, but never really had the time or the impetus to do it. I have a very successful business, The Big Picture People. I'm very busy, and to be honest, I've always struggled with content. Blogs have never really been something that I've found easy to write, and podcasting was always something that I thought I would like to have a go at. Anyway, along came COVID and I had no excuses. I had lots of time on my hands. I did some research. I listened to a few podcasts about starting a podcast. I read a few books and I thought, oh, well, let's just go for it. What's the worst thing that can happen? And I thought I maybe put out 10 episodes or so and it would be a useful experiment. I've happened to find that it's something that I deeply love. I am so passionate about it. I've met so many fascinating and interesting people. I get to speak to people, and hopefully you benefit from my questions that I ask them and my ability to draw in some really interesting guests that are quite diverse across our profession. So I'm definitely going to keep the podcast going. This isn't an epitaph. Don't worry. It's definitely not the end. I love it. It's always helpful to know that you like it too. I get a few emails every now and again and a few mentions and people who like it when we share it on social media. But if you do genuinely love the podcast, it'd be lovely after 100 episodes just to find out how it's helped you, what you get from it. And, you know, who knows, would you like to be a guest as well at some point in the future? I've had lots of tentative inquiries from people over the course of 3 years now we've been running the show, and people are like, I'm not really sure what people want to listen to me. And when we get into a conversation before we record the interview, it's clear that they've got some really interesting stories and some really interesting experience. And that's what this show is all about. It's about allowing people to share their stories, share their ideas, and for you as our listeners to benefit from them and to give you some wide-ranging topics and not just the usual things that we tend to cover when we think of our wonderful profession. So I hope you found it useful over these last 3 years and these 100 episodes. If you've not listened to some of our earlier episodes, they're very, very evergreen. There's no dating to them, I don't think. Some of the topics we covered during the pandemic are still highly relevant today, I think, and we deliberately didn't just talk about the pandemic. But also some of the more recent episodes, again, I've got some really enduring power to them, I hope, and give you that breadth of topics that we cover on the show. So here we go. Here's to the next 100 episodes. Thank you so much for being a listener. And again, as I always ask, if you know anyone in your network who might benefit from the show, please let them know about it. Please share it with them. I've always stuck to the principle of not having any advertising and not making it a commercial podcast, but genuinely wanting to make it something that's sort of self-development and something I would want to listen to myself. So thank you for being a listener, and onward and upward. Let's move into this 100th episode interview. For the 100th episode of Engaging Internal Comms, I wanted to visit a topic that I was personally very passionate about. I'm really keen at internal communications and internal communicators start to think of themselves as change agents. And I think this is something that's happened a lot since COVID, since the pandemic, and was happening before that as well, to become real strategic business partners within the organization, but able to actually walk the talk, to be able to actually deliver change themselves within the organization, not just through their own communications. So what I wanted to explore was this idea of internal communications as change makers. And a key part of that is the way that we carry ourselves, the way that we deliver our impact, the way that we communicate personally as well. So today's guest is a real true expert in this area. He has a fascinating story, both from his own upbringing through to his now into his professional life. And the work that he does is amazing in terms of helping organizations and individuals within organizations to be more effective communicators. So we're going to be looking at how we can deliver our internal communications and deliver our agendas within our organizations with real authenticity and with real purpose. So we're going to be looking at topics like nonverbal communication, which you're probably all familiar with, but at a level that I think is really advanced and but still really easy to understand and to access. We're going to be looking at storytelling, which is something we've looked at before on the show on numerous occasions, but linking that again into our personal effectiveness, our personal ability to be able to drive change within our organizations. The guest is also going to speak about deeper connections, how we can drive deeper connections, moving beyond the superficial to how we can have proper, meaningful connections with the people who we work with and who we serve. And long-term success being the outcome of all of this. How do we build a positive legacy that we feel proud of and actually enjoy the journey of being on that, going through that process as well? So that's what we're going to be looking at today. Internal comms, employee engagers, organizational development people as true change makers within their organization and making a positive difference. So I hope you enjoy this on our 100th episode. My guest on this episode is Richard Newman. Richard has worked as an actor, keynote speaker, coach, and speechwriter. In 2016, he created one of the largest studies on nonverbal communication and influence that's ever been made. His research proved that you can increase the number of people that you're able to influence by 42% through small adjustments in your behavior. He is the CEO and founder of UK Body Talk, a global leader in training in the science of communication. As an introvert on the autism spectrum, he has dedicated decades to understanding and improving communication, both for himself and for his clients. In his new book, Lift Your Impact, he shows how you can transform your mindset and actions and how that will help you to thrive and enjoy a greater sense of purpose and fulfillment in your life. So good morning, Richard. How are you?
I'm very good, thanks. Yeah, thank you, Craig. I appreciate having me on the show.
Yes, definitely. And at the start of a very busy week, you were just telling me before we started the interview recording, you've got a very busy week jet setting all over the place. So I appreciate your time. Whereabouts are you based, Richard?
So I'm based just outside London, on the west side of London, near enough to the airport that I can do all the jet setting that is required with my job.
Yeah, very handy this week, definitely. Yeah. So I gave an introduction there, very kind of professional, but also an insight into your own kind of connection to this area of communication, Richard. And so just building on what I said there in that introduction, tell us a little bit about how you've ended up doing what you're doing now, and the sort of work that you're doing and how you're helping organizations with those communication skills that we've just been talking about.
Sure. So, I mean, for me, it's interesting often for so many people to hear that even though I work in the field of communication now and help people to find their voice, express themselves and become change makers in whichever way they need to be. That's always been a huge challenge. Since the age of about 4 years old, before my fifth birthday, I moved school. I went to a new area, and I was trying to connect with the kids in this new school, and was suddenly aware of the fact there was some kind of component in my communication that was missing, where I would try to connect and interact and have conversations, and felt like I was in a glass bubble, trying to somehow build a connection or a friendship, and wasn't doing something correctly. And I just wasn't sure what it was. And I could see other people engaging with each other, but I didn't know how to integrate myself in this new class. And for many years afterwards and going up through my school years, I became more and more aware that communication was a challenge for me. And I thought initially it was because I was shy. And then I started to become aware of introvert, extrovert. And I thought, well, I'm very much an introvert. And I've since done, you know, all of the different tests that you can do on the spectrum of introversion to extroversion. I'm 99% introvert. But it wasn't actually until I was 44 that I got diagnosed as being autistic. And suddenly I had this realization, reflecting back over the previous many decades, to realize what was happening for me. And so for people who are not familiar with the area, what this means in my case is that I have a different way of approaching interactions and communication, a different way of seeing the world, if you like, than people who are neurotypical. So neurotypical people can communicate very well with each other. Autistic people can communicate well with each other, but it's when the two groups come together that suddenly there can be some challenges, some different ways of seeing interactions. And so what this enabled me then to do was that, well, first of all, it gave me the motivation to go and study communication. So I read hundreds of books in the area of communication on looking at body language and tone of voice and stage presence and gravitas and anything that I could find that would be useful. I also went overseas. And when I was 18 years old, I was living in a Tibetan monastery in the foothills of the Himalayas, where I was teaching English to the monks. But the big challenge being when I got there, they didn't speak any English at all. So I had to use nonverbal communication just to get through the day. And so I created this or developed this profound respect for what body language can do for all of us in communication. And then I studied acting for a few years, where I learned more about stage presence, connecting with someone on stage, connecting with an audience, and was loving this so much. So I found myself getting a haircut one day, and my hairdresser said, "What are you interested in? What do you do?" And I talked to him about all these different experiences I'd had. And he said, "If I give you a free haircut, would you teach my hairdressers how to communicate more effectively with their clients? Because they're a bit nervous when they come across, and personality is core to this business. Could you help us?" And so I did a session for a free haircut. They loved it, and I loved it. And I just sort of kept on going, and word of mouth started to spread about what I was doing, which has now led me to where I am today of running this company now, Body Talk, for the last 23 years. And we get about 2,000 bookings per year for my team to go and train people in communication all the way around the world. So I always like to say to people, if you're struggling with anything, whether it's communication or something else, if you pursue it, you may actually be able to master it enough that you can help other people who have that same struggle.
Wow, what a brilliant story. I love stories like that. I love stories that you kind of have a natural beginning and a real personal connection, and then flow through to being able to do something you're really passionate about. So that's fantastic. I love that story. Richard, thanks for sharing that.
Thank you.
And kind of seems a bit boring now, but if we're kind of turning it now into kind of like the theme of the conversation, which isn't boring, by the way, it is what we were going to talk about, and we are going to talk about, is the role of internal communicators. Because I think I'm always interested in how, you know, what your personal story there is very much around that kind of, you know, that kind of intimacy and that ability to connect at an individual level. And I think how we can scale that up to be more effective, and how we can build on those interpersonal relationships and interpersonal communication skills at scale within organizations. Because a lot of the people, you know, kind of internal communications, corporate communications, obviously are often communicating at scale, usually through, you know, kind of digital or written means. But I think, you know, I know there's a really interesting move now to sort of looking at how the role of leaders, and what we're going to talk about is how we can get internal communicators and employee engagement specialists to really think of themselves as change makers and explore that in a little bit more detail. So and I think it was you kind of initiated this idea, and we've looked at it before as well in terms of this idea of change makers. Let's just talk about that a little bit more, and what we mean here, and how that kind of relates to your backstory, I guess, to a certain extent.
Yes. Yeah. So I was really keen to put together this recent book I've been working on to help people be change makers, because I realized there was a huge need for it over the last few years. So having worked in helping people with communication for more than two decades, what I noticed is this gradual transition where maybe 15 years ago, people were asking us about public speaking. Mm. And then maybe 10 years ago, people were asking us more about presentation skills. And then maybe 5 years ago, people were asking more about communication skills. So things have gone from that sort of formality to a less informal way of communicating in general in business. But then these last few years have really thrown up a few pieces that we've had so many requests for from clients that I wanted to share with everyone, which essentially boils down into how to be a change maker. So I think that with the pandemic striking and all the challenges that people went through in different businesses in different industries, a key piece that came up for so many people that they were requesting from us was to work with them on mindset. And that idea that the world is going to throw you all sorts of challenges that are completely unexpected. You don't know when you wake up in the morning. There's no guarantees of what's going to be happening in the economy or in politics. with inflation or people being furloughed. There's all sorts of unexpected things that can come up. And so we wanted to work with clients on making sure that they can feel like they are a rock in the storm, so that no matter what's going on around you, you can ground yourself and have a really strong mindset to thrive, to get past anxiety, stress, and overwhelm, and be in a strong position. Because if you're going to create any kind of positive change, that's where you have to start from. So, you know, starting to be a change maker, an influencer, a positive influence in any organization, you have to be in a place where you have given yourself a sense of internal validation, a grounding at the beginning of the day, priming yourself before you go into meetings. So that's sort of phase one, which we can get into in more detail. Phase two, once you've looked after your own mindset, is to be able to have deeper connections with people around you, to be a positive influence on them. Because this came up over the last few years where people said that they were finding, not just with virtual working, but just generally spending less physical time around other people. There were people being hired in organizations who had never actually met each other face to face. And so people have been missing out on being around the water cooler or having a coffee break with people or a drink at the end of the day of work before they commute home. And they were finding that lots more conflict has been coming up. And in fact, there was some research done on this to show that we have become less amiable as people because we are around less people, and social media itself can create some sense of division as well. And so we're less willing to resolve things. So we wanted to look at this for clients to say, once you've got a strong mindset, how do you then build a deeper connection with people, even if you're not in the same building or the same country as them? How do you find a way to deeply connect and be a positive influence so you can resolve conflict and you can move things forward, moving your business forward, moving projects and ideas forward? How do you do that? And once you've done that, the final piece to add in there, which has always been important, so it's, you know, it's an important universal principle, is long-standing. How do you really transform your legacy and keep momentum behind ideas that you care about long term? Because as we all know, you know, people can make New Year's resolutions and then give up on them on the 3rd of January. And it's often the way sometimes with projects that people care about within a business. They have so many obstacles and so many committee meetings that they have to go through, challenges that are thrown up by external events and stakeholders not agreeing, that then they end up the energy gets dissipated behind it, and then they end up, you know, giving up on a project. So I wanted to talk about, well, long term, how do you create that change? What do you need to do that are the big pieces and the small pieces? And so that's what I put together in this sort of three-part book of looking at changing your mindset, deeper connections with people, and transforming your future. And so once you've done that for yourself, you can then help others on that path too.
Excellent. Very, very, and certainly the initial part of what you're talking about there kind of reminds me, you know, a bit of study I've done around emotional intelligence, around, you know, kind of getting your own self-managing your own emotions and your kind of feelings about things, and before you try and influence others. So, absolutely. So can we dive into those a little bit more, in a little bit more detail then? I guess these are the fundamentals of how we influence and as you say, create that long-term impact, that long-term legacy. Yeah. So we talked about this in our kind of conversation before the interview, and I think I've got here nonverbal comms, storytelling, deeper connections, long-term successes. This is what we're going to be talking about now. So shall we start with nonverbal communication then, because I know that's like a real key part of what you do, and do you want to tell us a little bit more about that and how that relates to what you've just been explaining to us, Richard?
Yes. So it's a funny thing with running a company called, officially called UK Body Talk Limited, but we refer to it as Body Talk. When you tell people at a wedding or a networking event, they say, "Hey, what do you do?" And you say, "Well, I run a company called Body Talk." You get a lot of conversations going about what is nonverbal communication? What does it mean to people? So I'm always fascinated to explore this. And there are some people who think that it's sort of superficial, that it's not that important, that maybe words are much more important. And on the other side, when people are fascinated by nonverbal communication, they tend to be fascinated from the point of view of wanting to read other people and know what's happening in someone else's mind. And they tend to miss the personal impact, what their nonverbal communication is really saying about them. So if we just dive back into the story of when I was 18 years old, arriving at this monastery and realizing that I was there to train, I think it was maybe 30 monks. I forget the exact number. And they're of different ages. They're aged between sort of 10 and about 65 years old. But they didn't speak any English. And so when I first arrived there, they took me into the kitchen. They gave me a cup of Tibetan tea, which is awful stuff to drink from my perspective. It's a third tea, a third butter, and a third salt. So it's pretty tough to drink. So I was sitting there looking across the bench towards these monks who are gazing at me and realizing we don't have any words that we can use to connect with each other. And, you know, how are the next 6 months of my life going to go helping them learn English if we don't have any words? And pretty soon, over that cup of tea, a big thing shifted for me. I sat there with them in their kitchen for about an hour, and we realized that non-verbally, we could actually understand a huge amount about each other. We could read each other at a deeper level. And I realized that anything that I therefore did non-verbally was communicating something to them. And so I had to make sure, to be an effective English teacher for them, that I was aware of my nonverbal communication and that it was congruent with my words. By which I mean that if I was trying to teach them the word excited, I had to make sure that I looked excited and I sounded excited. Because if I came into a lesson feeling nervous or feeling stressed and then tried to teach them the word excited, they would think excited means stressed or excited means nervous, because they're picking up on that from me non-verbally. The same is true in day-to-day communication at work, where if you get a CFO who's going up to speak at a conference and this is a numbers person who maybe is not that comfortable on the stage, and they stand up there looking uncomfortable and saying, we've had a great year and the numbers are going up and it's looking good for next year. But their nonverbal communication is, I don't want to be here. I'm terrified. Then people get the message of, we should be terrified about the numbers. So I always say to people, you need to make sure the nonverbal is giving the message,
yeah,
and that the words are there just to signify that, yes, the message they've got from you nonverbally is heading in the right direction. And so what I did was back in 2016, as you mentioned earlier, I put together this study. It actually took us 18 months to put this together. We're working with UCL and worked with Professor Adrian Fernham, who's one of the top psychologists in the world today, to devise this study that was designed to look at, is there a way universally that everybody can transform their nonverbal communication to increase the influence they have on the people around them? And we involved in the study men and women. We had people with lighter skin and darker skin. We had them go through an aging process as well while we were doing this experiment, so that we could figure out, does it matter, in terms of nonverbal communication, does it matter? Does it change if you're older, younger? Does your gender matter? Does your skin color matter? Does where you live in the world matter? And we found out through our study, none of those things were impacting our results. And what we created was videos of people communicating, and people who watched those videos then had to rate the person. They had to rate, how confident are you? How convincing are you? How good a leader do I think you are? Would I vote for you in an election? And in every single video, we had someone speaking. They were wearing the same clothes as the people in all the other videos. They were saying the same words as well. We just slightly changed their nonverbal communication from one video to the next to see, does this make a genuine impact and does it work universally? The people taking part in the experiment only ever saw one video. So we then had hundreds of people involved in watching these videos. And what we found is that you can say the same words, you can wear the same clothes, but if you have a slight change in your nonverbal communication, you can increase the number of people who are convinced by your message by 42%. You can get 44% more people believing you are a good leader or a change maker. And you can also get 58% more people to vote for you in an election, when you're saying the same words, wearing the same clothes, and a slight change in your nonverbal behavior. And it worked universally. It worked. We tested it across Asia, Europe. We tested it across the Americas as well. So this is something that everybody can use. So to give a simple example on this, because people may be wondering, okay, well, what do I do? One of the simplest things that we work on with people is to talk about gravity and the way this impacts the human body, because lots of people come to us as leaders saying, I need more gravitas. And you can get gravitas through thinking about how gravity engages with your body. So if you think about the average person, if you go into a meeting and you watch someone delivering a presentation, maybe standing up and facilitating a team meeting or speaking on stage at a conference, what you very often see is that person will lean their weight across to one side, leaning on one hip, and then they might sway gently and lean their weight on the other hip, or maybe they just rest over to one side in a casual position. Some people even lean across and cross one of their feet across too. So they are almost just putting all of their weight onto one foot. When you're doing that, even if you're doing it in just conversation in the hallway with your boss, if someone was to give you a quick push on the shoulder, you would fall over. You are physically the embodiment of being a pushover. And so when you're trying to create change or have influence on your children, your friends, your coworkers, your stakeholders, and you're standing physically as an embodiment of being a pushover, then nonverbally that comes across and the person will respond to you differently, thinking, okay, I know that you've said there's a deadline on Thursday, but I don't really believe you. It seems like you're a pushover. I'm going to finish it next Tuesday. And so even though you've been very clear in your verbal instructions, your nonverbal was saying, this doesn't actually matter. Whereas if you shift, and we found this worked universally, if you shift and you stand or sit in a position where gravity goes straight down on your body, you have your weight equally balanced between left foot, right foot, toes, and heels. You slightly lift up your sternum so you have an elevated posture, not an arrogant posture, but a slightly elevated posture. Your body's in alignment, and then you say exactly the same words. Then, as I said earlier, 42% more people will be convinced that that what you're saying is right, and they should act on your decision. And it's a tiny little shift that you can make, but it's so important. So this is where I encourage people to go. With nonverbal communication, you have to work on building up your self-awareness. What is it you're doing physically? And if people pressed mute, or if they didn't speak your language at all, would they still understand your intention and how they're supposed to feel by the end of that meeting? So that's sort of a long way around that's thinking about why is nonverbal communication so important.
Yeah, just a question from me on that, because I'm equally passionate about nonverbal communication, and particularly, you know, you mentioned it earlier about the impact that you know, I think the depletion of some of those communication skills because of the pandemic and the fact that we're all working through cameras in two dimensions at the moment. Just from my perspective, I'm just interested. You know, can you teach someone who to relay a message that they don't fully believe themselves just by use of their nonverbal communication? Because I'm always fascinated about the phenomena that we always leak our genuine feelings anyway. You know, we can learn to kind of mask them in some way through our nonverbal communications, but often, you know, it's like the Bill Clinton nodding his head while he was saying, "I never had sexual relationships with that woman." It's hard sometimes, you know, if it's genuinely not the case to mask it through your nonverbal comms. What's your take on that? I'm just fascinated that as a sort of student of nonverbal comms myself.
Yeah, so I would say, I mean, there certainly are people who master that, who can be coached to mask their true feelings. It's not something that we get engaged with. And it's not something I would say is ethical for people.
No, definitely not.
The truth will come through at some point, but you certainly can see this. You know, people train themselves to go through, you know, lie detectors and appear to be truthful. So there's certainly methods through that piece. But what I would always encourage people to do is to take this into business. Sometimes we've had this from middle managers who've said, look, the company has changed direction and I want to stay working here, but I don't really agree with it. However, I do need to get my team to go ahead with whatever this new initiative is. And so from that perspective, I'll always come into them to guide them on the communication to say, let me then get clear about why it is that you've decided to stay if you don't agree with this initiative. And they might say, well, I think, you know, overall the company is good. And I see that there is good at its core. I'm just not quite sure where we're heading here. And I say to them, well, you know, is there a reason why you've decided that you will still communicate this to your team? And they might say, well, I'm still going to communicate it, partly because it's my job, but also because I see, look, even if I don't agree with the method of how we're going about this, I can see that the end result we're aiming for is where we should be. And so we talk about delivering the message from that perspective of with having integrity behind it, of being able to say to people, this is a direction that we are going to go in. And as an ambassador of the company, as the middle manager, saying, this is the direction, this is what the end result will be. This is why I stand here behind this message, because I still believe in this company and I believe in that end result, even though we might find the next couple of months challenging based on this. So that there's truthfulness there and you are having integrity behind what you have to do, but getting it out in a way that feels authentic.
Absolutely. Oh, that's excellent. Yeah, that's a really good way of helping people to position that in their mind, so they're comfortable with it from a personal values perspective, and as you say, the authenticity. Okay, I'm conscious of time, and we've only covered nonverbal communications. We might need to. We've got storytelling, deeper connections, and long term success as well. So maybe we can just talk through those, because they're the continuation of this narrative that you've just been helping us with.
Sure. So to briefly talk about storytelling, then the key piece that I like to explain for people on storytelling is that it's not. Clearly not about once upon a time, but also with businesses, sometimes I find people in business, they hear about storytelling and they say, oh yeah, I'm really good at that. I always talk to people about what I did on my weekend. I talk to them about what I did 10 years ago and how that's relevant. And they think that that's storytelling, but actually it's not. So storytelling, the reason it's talked about and it's so effective in business, it is very simply the way that the human brain wants to receive information. That's what it is.
Yeah.
So the structure of a story, if you think about it, if you've had... imagine, you know, people talk about screen fatigue. They say, oh, I've got so many Teams meetings and I can't bear it. I'm in front of a screen all day and I have to close my laptop down and just get away from a screen. And I say, what do you do? They say, well, the thing is, I just go and chill in the living room watching Netflix for 3 hours. And I say to them, well, that's another screen, isn't it? What do you mean? What is this screen fatigue? So the reason that we can relax in front of the television with Netflix is because the structure of story is something that we love taking part in. We love receiving it. We love sharing stories. We'll do that with our friends. And so the key to storytelling in business is understanding how does the human brain want to receive information? And even when you're talking about a spreadsheet or you're talking about KPIs or you're talking about some sort of initiative, put it in the structure of a story. So to give you the simple premise on that, the brain... staying really simple on the science, we've got three key areas we must engage, which is the survival mind, the emotional mind, and the logical part of the mind. And a story engages those three areas in that order. So you think about any story that you would watch, you switch on TV tonight, whether you're watching a TV show or a movie, at the beginning, there is some kind of challenge, a threat to the current situation. Yeah. Which makes the survival mind think, oh, this is interesting. I wonder what's going to happen. How's that person going to survive this? Then what you see is not the solution, which is where people go in business storytelling. Instead of that, what you see is the possible end result. You realize that if this person can overcome their challenges, there's a tremendous reward at the end where they would fall in love, live happily ever after, overcome some major challenge, create an extraordinary legacy. You sense that possibility, which lights up the emotional mind. And then you watch the journey from where they are to where they want to be. And so that's what I encourage people to do in business. Instead of going in saying, here's a challenge, here's a solution, which is deadly boring, which is not storytelling, that is just telling. You need to light up the three key areas of the brain to make sure that people care about it and understand what direction you're supposed to go in. So that's why storytelling is really important. Then to talk about deeper connections, which just to follow the path of the conversation. Yeah. The deeper connections that we have with people, what I notice, one of the key strategies I give to people is that a lot of our conversations day after day, as particularly at the moment, have become transactional. They've become surface level. So if you think about the kind of questions that people are asking you daily in your work or maybe even with your family too, they tend to be what I call first level questions, really just hitting the surface, which is fact and data questions. What time do you need this by? What is this project about? How many people are involved? What's the date? What's the price? What's the budget? It's very surface level. And we can go about our work and just think, I don't feel like anybody really cares about me. They don't really know me. I just feel like a cog in the machine because we're having that first level. And even when you go into a shop or go into a hotel and you meet people, that might be the same thing. Here's your room key. This is the price of the object and so on. So it leaves us feeling deeply disconnected. Then when we have conversations where we feel more connected with people, we go to second level questions, which is emotional questions, where people might say, how do you feel about this project? What are your thoughts about this? I'd love to know your opinion on this. And as soon as we open up into that, it feels like we are talking to a caring member of our family or somebody, a friend of ours who we've called up just to have a good chit chat with. And when you get to that place, you can leave that conversation feeling like this person cares about me. I care about them. We know how each other feel. We've now settled to a deeper level of connection. And that might be as deep as people get. And then they get confused when somebody does something that seems out of the blue and they just don't know why it happened. And then they suddenly think, I didn't ever know you to begin with, because they've never had a third level question. And the third level of conversations, if you really want to dig more deeply and feel connected with your stakeholders, your boss, your team, your family members, is motives and drivers questions.
Right.
And this is where you can get into and, you know, have conflict resolution, where you can deeply connect with your partner, with team members, is to understand what are the values, what are the principles that matter most to them in day-to-day life? What is driving their decisions around how they behave on a project, how they behave in a family environment? What are the motives, drivers, and principles they care about? And importantly, this is beyond time and money. If someone says to you, well, we have to do this because of the time involved and the money involved, that's why. That's never the real answer. That those things are important in business and important in life. We need to take note of them. But there is a value underneath it about why they care so much about delivering it on time, about why they care so much about the expense of a certain item. And so it's important to have those third level conversations where you can, having built up trust with people, so that when you know that, and this is extraordinary. I mentioned to you earlier before we started recording that I've just been leading a retreat for people over the course of the weekend. And what I get them all to do at the beginning of this retreat is to share their values, their core values with each other. They explore what they are, they share them with each other, and they become extraordinarily connected. The group we just had came from so many different backgrounds, people who would never normally come together in an average environment. And by the end of it, they formed this tribe, this family with each other, where they feel like they have been finally seen by somebody that they don't feel in a way that they don't feel seen in their day-to-day life. So understanding that piece leads to deeper connections.
Yeah, fantastic. And I guess bringing this to a conclusion, not the interview, but this model that you've been sharing, you then talk about long-term success, and we were going to talk about positive legacy after that. Are the two related to each other? Yeah,
absolutely. Mm. So with long-term success, I mean, if people think about a long-term goal that they've set and whether they've achieved it or not, there are common themes that you can see standing out for people. And to keep this nice and simple for now, what I talk about is pivotal and pedestrian events. So if you set a big goal, what we will often see with people is that they'll have maybe something that's a pivotal experience that they believe will take their life, their career to the next level, and they are shooting for that, constantly hoping that pivotal event is going to show up for them, which might be, if someone's written a book, they're thinking, if only I can get interviewed by Oprah, or if only I can get endorsed by somebody who's a big known, well-known celebrity, then that will make all the difference. And they're constantly focusing on the pivotal piece and not doing the day-to-day pedestrian pieces that would lead them towards that actually happening. And so they get to a place where they might say, I'm disillusioned. I've dreamed before and it hasn't happened. So therefore, I'm not going to dream again, because they've just been focusing on pivotal. There are other people, though, who just focus on pedestrian. They say, what I'm going to do to be successful is I'm just going to put my head down and work as hard as I can. And the challenge with that piece is that they wake up in 5 years' time and they realize they're still where they were. They've been working hard, very hard, but it's almost digging a hole for themselves rather than moving in a particular direction. So what I talk about with that lasting legacy is have a sense of your personal North Star. What is a vision for the future that you will be compelled to wake up each day and move towards? Whether you take one step per day or 100 steps per day towards it, you feel compelled towards it. You know what it is. And you work out between here and where you are, What are the pivotal things that you would like to happen? And what are the pedestrian actions in that direction that would make the pivotal pieces inevitable so you can keep on moving there? And by putting those two pieces together, you can then day by day build an extraordinary legacy. And as I always say to people on this, whether you end up getting to the point of being a New York Times bestselling author or whatever is, you know, a huge thing for people to achieve or not, and people may have heard this before, the journey is the point. Getting the achievement at the end is just sort of by the by. The journey is the point, because it's going on that journey that makes you who you truly are and makes you a person that you feel proud of. Whether you get a certificate or a medal at the end of it is really not the point. The journey is the reason to go on it because of who you become. Because who you become, no one can ever take away from you. You know, if you have a world record, somebody will beat it one day. Of course they will. So, yeah. You're not going to have that forever, but you'll be the person who was able to have a world record because of who you developed yourself into being.
Yeah, that's fantastic. I love that analogy. It's a really, really powerful analogy. So you, I'm certainly not Oprah, Richard, but tell us a little bit more about the book. You've mentioned it, and I guess it follows the structure of what we've been talking about during the interview. Is it a book that you can kind of dip into, or is it a book that's meant to be read cover to cover, or is it a kind of workbook? Tell us a little bit more about the style of the book.
So I was really pleased with, I worked with my editor at McGraw-Hill, who've published the book, and she was fantastic and really believed in the vision I had for this, where it is it's almost like a sort of a choose your own adventure book where it becomes your book. So it is a workbook style, and I guide people through various activities that then they do, and they can do it on the page. I'm a big fan of writing in books. That's the way that I learned. So I put workbook pages within the book. I know that I've heard from clients and friends who have a notebook that they have beside their book. So they can be writing in there and not sully the book itself. Yeah. But it's a way of going through these activities so that you truly transform by the end of it. And, you know, there's an audiobook version as well, or a digital version, but it is designed to take people on that journey of firstly becoming the rock in the storm, thriving in every situation, then thinking, well, who do I need to connect with? Who would I like to influence to move my life and their life in a more positive direction? And then beyond that, how do I transform my future and my legacy? So it's very much along those lines. And if people want to find out more details about the book, there's a whole webpage on it, which is liftyourimpact.com/the book, and then they can find out things, and there's a video there about the book too.
And we'll put that link into the show notes as well, so people make it easier for people to find. So I guess the answer to this next final question, I guess, or the sort of penultimate question is by the book, but just you know, kind of someone working in a big organization who, you know, loves all the things they've heard in this interview today, and they want to become more of a change maker. I'm sure they are already. Just any kind of quick tips, sort of, you know, low hanging fruit that they can try, that maybe it's covered something you cover in the book, but just something, a kind of quick thought or tip from you, Richard.
Sure. I mean, well, if people want extra resources that they can sort of digest in the space of 5 minutes, we've got a whole bunch of resources on our website that are all free.
Yeah.
So ukbodytalk.com, and then you just go to the resources page. There's articles, there's videos, there's audio recordings, there's lots of stuff. But the piece I would always say to people to do, if you want to do an activity today, then I think there's actually a free download of this on my book website where you can get the first 25 or it might be 40 pages of the book for free. And inside there, I wanted to give everyone this gift, which is some workbook pages on figuring out your values. If there's one thing that you do before anything else, the reason I care about this so much is that when you work out your values and you're super clear on those for yourself, and therefore what your North Star is for you, you are in a place where you have internal validation and you can go into any environment feeling more confident, more clear, giving more certainty to others. And it's the first step to being more of a change maker and showing up as an authentic version of you, and thereby drawing to you people who resonate with who you truly are. And so I wanted to give that as that initial piece. So when I talk about it, you know, just in case people don't see the download or so on, I always like to keep this really refined and say, work out your top three values, because there's many ways of doing this. Some people go for like 10, 20, 30 values and it's overwhelming. But if you work out what the top three are, you can always remember them and you can write them down and put them on a post-it note next to your bed, put them next to your webcam so that you always associate with them whenever you're sort of getting into an important meeting. You can put them on the home screen of your phone so that you're always priming yourself to be a version of you that you're proud of in every situation. So that's really the first step.
Mm. I love it. That's fantastic. Excellent. Well, look, thank you so much, Richard. Now, in terms of what we're going to share with our listeners, I'm going to put your link into the book that you mentioned. So Lift Your Impact, the book, your own website that you mentioned already, but ukbodytalk.com. You've got your LinkedIn profile as well, which I'll put into the show notes as well. So if anyone wants to reach out to you, I guess you're more than happy with that then. And I've also got your Instagram. So I think you gave me your Instagram. Is that something you use?
That's right.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah,
so LinkedIn and Instagram, if people are thinking, oh, I could really use a bit of like 60 seconds worth of advice, I've put a bunch of 60 second videos up on there on different topics just to keep people inspired.
Excellent. Superb. Well, look, Richard, and I think I didn't mention it at the beginning, actually, but this is our 100th episode as well. So I wanted a topic and a speaker that was befitting of that. So it's been a real honor to have you on our 100th episode of the podcast, Richard. I wish you a very successful week and safe travels. You've got many flights to get, many countries to visit, many interesting assignments. And I'm sure by the end of the week, you'll be able to reflect on the journey that you've had this week as well. So thank you so much, Richard. You take care, and maybe we'll get you back on again in the future, because I'd like to go into some of the things you talked about in a little bit more detail.
Great. I'd be really happy to. Thanks very much, Craig.
Thanks, Richard. Thank you. We hope you've enjoyed this episode of the Engaging Internal Comms podcast. If you've got any ideas for episodes you'd like us to cover in future, you can email us at info@thebigpicturepeople.co.uk, or you can use the feedback form at engagingic.com. If you're not already subscribed to the show via your podcast platform, please do so. And if you could leave a review for us, that would be absolutely fantastic. We have links to other episodes at engagingic.com. All of our previous episodes are available there. And if you're interested in our visual communication services, our big pictures, our learning maps, our explainer videos, and also our live graphic recording, please get in touch with us again at info@thebigpicturepeople.co.uk. Thank you.